720 WGN. Hey there, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. Always grateful to you for sharing part of your afternoon with me. So lots to do on the program today, lots of things to discuss. A little bit later, we're going to take a look at the business of baseball cards, particularly right now in our digital time, what that looks like and what that means to be a baseball card collector right now. But before we do all that, we're going to talk with Lauren Zimbach, who is a business reporter at Chicago Tribune and regular contributor to this program. Lauren wrote about an Amazon plant here in Illinois with robot coworkers, which is a term I love, the idea of that. But you know what? That is, we can kind of talk about it and joke about it and the idea of a robot coworker. But in fact, there is a lot of discussion around the idea of animation, animated jobs, stealing or animated, what am I trying to say? Animated components taking jobs. So here to discuss that with us, please welcome Lauren Zimbach. Hi, Lauren.
Hey, Amy, thanks so much for having me on.
Always a pleasure to talk with you. So talk to me about this story. On the onset, it kind of seems like, oh, that seems like an interesting idea, kind of Jetsons thing to have a robot coworker. But in fact, it is a contentious issue because I think there is always so much discussion about changing technology in particularly manufacturing sector jobs and how that changes for workers and what that means to job numbers. So as you were taking a look at the story, what is it that you found?
Right. I mean, that's, the big question anytime we're talking about, more automation in the workplace. If you ask Amazon about it, they'll say that facilities that have these robots tend to employ more people because they're more efficient, and that means they're processing more orders. And the one in Moni does have a higher headcount than some of their other fulfillment centers in Illinois. On the other hand, if they wanted to have the, handle the same number of orders without using those robots, they definitely would need more people to make that happen. So one of the experts that I spoke with said, even if you consider the fact that, there are some new jobs created, people who have to work in these fulfillment centers, maybe some more technical jobs, maintaining the robots, there probably aren't as many of those as, you lose in maybe people that they would need to replace the robots. But the other challenging thing with all this is that, e-commerce companies, Amazon included, are growing really fast and need a lot of employees to fill all the online orders that we're making. And it's getting tougher to find enough people.
Right.
So this is one way to help keep up with demand.
Right. A lot of times when we talk about this, this issue in the workplace, I think we tend to say robot because it sounds like a like one by one comparison or a replacement of human beings, right? But we're really just talking about evolving technology and machinery at the end of the day.
Right. The robots that they're using out in Moni are definitely not ready to fully replace a human worker just yet. If you're thinking something like C-3PO or, a fancy robotic arm that's grabbing items off shelves and, stuffing them in boxes, definitely not there yet. What they actually do is they're these sort of squat, square devices that roll along the ground, and they sort of roll underneath these towers of shelves where all of the products are stacked. And they sort of ferry them back and forth to the workers who are either unloading new items to stock in the warehouse or taking items off the shelves to pack up an order. If you're one of the employees there, you're actually probably spending a lot less time, walking the aisles and picking out items than someone who's working at, a similar fulfillment center that doesn't have the robots.
Right.
Companies are definitely investing in sort of the next generation of technology, and trying to find ways to maybe automate more of the things that human workers currently do today. But we're definitely a ways off from totally replacing people just yet.
From full-on Jetsons, right, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So what was surprising to you about this story as you started taking a look at it and talking with people connected to this warehouse?
I think one of the things that was surprising for me, as cool and space age as it does look when you first see them, in a lot of ways, on its face, as you're walking around, you know, the jobs that people are doing aren't that much different than they would be in a more traditional fulfillment center. You know, right now, like I said, you know, they cut down on some of the grunt work, like, you know, walking back and forth and walking the aisles and pulling items. And there's definitely some more automation behind the scenes. But if you look at what people are doing on the warehouse floor in Monee compared to, you know, I also got to see one of their fulfillment centers that doesn't use the robots in Romeoville. You know, the actual tasks that people are doing of, you know, packing up the box hasn't changed that much just yet. So it really is, at this point, you know, very, very much an add-on.
Right. And when we hear criticism of often these sort of advances that seem like they're shifting jobs, you know, I think the truth of it is that we really, our manufacturers have to keep on top of technology to be relevant and to be competitive.
Absolutely. You know, there is more competition today for people to be doing these sorts of jobs, you know, in part because, you know, while they are good full-time jobs, you know, not everyone wants to, you know, work in a warehouse like that. That competition does make them just a little bit tougher to fill. So, yeah, I mean, they have to be investing in this. You know, I do think one of the challenges, you know, when people say that, creating this new technology will create, you know, new jobs for people, you know, helping maintain the systems that, you know, maintain the robots or maintaining the systems that, you know, direct them where to go. It's not quite as simple as a one-for-one replacement. You know, those are definitely more technical jobs that require more skills. So it's not as though it's a direct one-for-one swap from, you know, maybe someone who would have worked on the warehouse floor.
And probably an advanced, like a more advanced skill set or a constantly evolving skill set required of the worker, right?
Right, right. So, you know, definitely some new skills required, but, you know, they're also higher level, probably higher paying jobs too.
Right, right. Well, I especially in the story, I loved the you noted someone who works there describing himself on Twitter as a robot manager. There's a job title we wouldn't have seen a while ago.
Nope. 2,000 people and a fleet of robots that he manages. So definitely keeps things interesting, I'm sure.
I mean, there's probably something to be said for that. That's probably so. All right. Well, thanks so much. And if you follow me on Twitter, I'm going to be sure and tweet this story out so all of you can read this story. The headline is, at Amazon's warehouse, robot coworkers are the new normal. So I want to make sure everybody can read that. So if you follow me on Twitter, you can see that a little bit later this afternoon. Lauren Zimbach, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks very much, Amy.
All right, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to take a look at the story about how Walmart is reportedly in talks with Humana to merge and move together and work together. We'll see what that would look like and where that is in the process. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. Appreciate you sharing part of your Saturday with me. A little bit later in the program, we're going to be talking about the business of baseball cards, especially how it is trying to adapt to digital culture. Hadn't thought about that, had you? I had not either. So we're going to be taking a look at that. But right now, we are joined by Dana Mattioli, a reporter at Wall Street Journal, to talk with us about how Walmart is reportedly in talks to buy Humana, the health insurance provider. Hi, Dana. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So talk us through this. We're just sort of starting to see this emerge on social media. A lot of people are kind of speculating, well, those things seem very different. Why would they work together and how would they work together? So talk us through this, if you would.
Yeah, that's right. So the two sides are in early stage talks, and it's indicative of what's going on in the retail sector. People are being squeezed by Amazon and e-commerce, so the retailers are looking for other ways to diversify into businesses that are more Amazon-proof, and healthcare and health insurance is one of those areas.
Amazon proof is a word that is a term that, I'm seeing more and more of, as I, you know, we've talked many times on this program, about that very thing, about how retailers are really having to scramble and adjust and exist in an Amazon world. And so what would that look like? And would that be a very sharp pivot for Walmart into more of a healthcare and less retail, or would that mean just an additional area?
I mean, at the end of the day, Walmart's the biggest retailer in the world. So I still think that they would, you know, mostly be a retailer, but this would give them a touch point with their customers that they're already interacting with. They have pharmacies in their stores. So in addition to prescribing medicine and refilling them, they could also, you know, be a one-stop shop for insurance and also grocery. They're the biggest food seller in the U.S., clothing. So this would give them, you know, front to back control of the customer.
Right, right. And, you know, I think you're exactly right. We don't think of Walmart as being in that healthcare space. But in fact, you're exactly right. There are in-store, you know, eyewear and things like that. There's already a lot in that space.
Yeah.
And
I think we could...
Go ahead, sorry.
I said I think it would look similar to what CVS is doing in trying to buy Aetna. They're in a similar predicament, and they made a very bold move, a $69 billion deal, like bet the farm type of move, to buy health insurer Aetna.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so as you were taking a look at this story, what was surprising to you about it? What part emerged, or what narrative emerged that maybe you didn't see coming?
The most surprising thing to me is that, you know, mergers and acquisition is not really part of Walmart's DNA. They've stepped into that water like really gingerly. They've done a few small deals. The biggest one they've ever done was in 1999. They bought a grocery store chain called Asda. A few years ago, they bought Jet.com for $3 billion. You don't see them doing bet the farm types of deals. Humana's a $37 billion company. You'd have to add a premium to that, and you get into the $40, $50 billion range. So this is, you know, pretty telling that they think that they'd go down that path.
Mm-hmm. And so what is that indicative of in your mind? Is that just a kind of a really bold move that Walmart seems to think is necessary in this kind of Amazon moment, or do you think it is a larger play?
I think, you know, all retail companies are looking at other sectors and seeing higher margins, higher growth, and that's where customer spending is shifting. So I think it would be a smart move if they're able to ink a deal. But I also think it just shows that these companies are really under pressure from shareholders, you know, at the executive levels to find ways to diversify.
And so what would that merger look like, just as it's starting to be discussed between these two really large mm-hmm. companies? What would that mean for workers? What would that mean for brands and products? And just what would that world be?
So as of right now, the talks are very early stage. So it's unclear if they've even hammered out what this would look like. And with all deal situations, they could take a step back and decide to just do more of a partnership and not a full acquisition, and find ways to work with Humana more closely and strengthen those ties. But typically when companies from different industries merge, you know, it gives you a different capability in terms of your product offerings, and you have fewer synergies than you would in a deal where you're buying a competitor, where you could eliminate levels of executives and cost cutting, because these are two different areas you'd be getting into.
Right. That's exactly where I was going with that, is do we get the sense that there would be a major restructuring? But usually not, as you point out, when we are looking at two really different companies, often there is not a lot of overlap.
That's right.
Right. Well, it is really interesting. So what is the next step that we can expect to see in this story as it continues to unfold?
So the way mergers and acquisitions work is, you know, before a deal gets announced, the companies are usually in talks for 6 months or so. So we broke this very early in their talks, and sometimes that could derail deal talks because the price of the target company goes up a lot if it's a public company like this is, or it can make it more complicated. So I think, you know, if a deal were to be announced, it would be months away. I think that in the interim, Walmart's probably fielding a lot of questions from their shareholder base, from their employees, wondering what's going to happen, that they're going to have to sort out. And I think, you know, their bankers and lawyers and executives are figuring out full company deal versus, you know, joint venture versus other iterations to see what the best, you know, use of their stock and cash is for Walmart.
Right. Well, we will continue to turn to you as it continues to unfold. It would be very interesting to see how it'll be interesting either way, but it would be very interesting to see what that would look like if the two were to merge. So thank you so much for being with us, Dana Mattioli, reporter at Wall Street Journal.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Okay, so we're going to take a little break, get you to news, all that good stuff. Back in just a bit. On the other side of news, we're going to be talking about baseball collecting in this digital age and what that means, what that looks like, all that good stuff. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. Suddenly the sun came out just now. We're sitting here in the Michigan Avenue Showcase Studio. Very beautiful. Suddenly it was kind of gray and foggy looking. All of a sudden it's sunshiny. Still kind of chilly, but okay, it's looking a little more springtime-ish out there. But of course, we're going to keep checking in upstairs at the top and bottom of every hour for the latest in weather and all that good stuff and see how your Easter weekend is going to look. So lots to do on the show still here on the second half. There is a really fun story at chicagotribune.com. It is by Alex Parker, who's a digital news editor there, upstairs there, our neighbors. And it is all about looking at baseball card collecting right now in the digital age that we are in, and how maybe it's a little bit harder sell to for young people to be baseball card collectors, where once it was not. But nonetheless, the industry is perhaps adapting to that and thinking of ways to meet people where they are. Thanks so much for being with us, Alex.
Thanks for having me.
So talk to me about this. This is such an interesting and charming story, because we think of baseball card collecting being one thing and one thing only, and that's that shoebox full of baseball cards. But in fact, this was it's a long read. It's really quite good and really interesting about all the ways that the digital space and the analog collecting world are kind of meeting and trying to figure each other out.
It really was interesting to learn about. I collected cards as a kid during that heyday of baseball card collecting in the late 80s and early 90s. So I had that shoebox. I had those binders full of cards, and I did learn that my collection, even though it's very valuable to me, is pretty much worthless as card collecting has changed. Today, it's so much more than what it was when I was collecting 25 years ago or so. We have, as you mentioned, digital cards, people downloading an app from one of the card companies to download their favorite cards and trade with other users, almost like through social media. They have cards on demand. You can go online, and if, say, Ian Happ of the Cubs hits a home run on the first game, first pitch of the season, they actually produced a card for that. So it was available for 24 hours, and it's limited edition. Those are some of the things that are really changing the industry these days. Limited edition cards, stuff that people see inherent value in. A lot of cards now have pieces of equipment like bats or even jerseys embedded in them. Panini America, one of the leading card companies, actually embeds gems in some of its cards. So these are things I couldn't have imagined when I was collecting so many years ago.
Right. So other than the value of your collection, your personal collection, what else was surprising to you about this story as you began to look at it?
I thought it was interesting how a lot of the vendors I talked to, the dealers, the people who sell cards to the general public, have a very divergent view on where young people are as opposed to the card companies themselves. Those dealers say kids just aren't collecting cards anymore. They don't see them in the shops. They don't see them at shows. You know, there are kids who collect, and I talked to a few of them, and they collect for the same reasons I did. They like baseball. They like collecting cards of their favorite team or their favorite players. But they just aren't the driving force of the industry that they were 30 years ago. The card companies say that they actually are somewhat of a driving force, maybe not what it was one day, what it used to be. But today, kids, as we all know, are living their lives in the digital space, and that's where the card companies have gone. I talked about the apps that they have. Topps has one called Bunt, where you can go on and be one of 2.5 million users who have downloaded more than 500 million packs of digital cards. I don't get it. I guess, I don't know, I work at a newspaper, so maybe that's just me not knowing everything about the digital world, but that's where people are going, and that's where the card companies are going.
And so really it gets at a kind of a new definition of the word collect, because, you know, I think we think of collect being it has come into my possession and I have this physical object. Whereas if it's a digital card and it's limited edition, it seems, well, it seems a couple of things. There's a different definition or a different way we have to think about what it means to collect or to have something. But also, doesn't it open up the door for perhaps a different, maybe fraudulent cards or getting a screen grab and saying you have something you don't have? It seems like it opens a lot of issues with duplication.
Perhaps. I really don't know much about that particular topic, but with these apps, the cards live within them. You trade with users within the app. So, you know, people may be trying to scam folks. And in fact, I know that's a big deal in the sports memorabilia world. As it relates to baseball card collecting today in the digital space, I'm not sure if that's a big issue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it does kind of make me think we need to perhaps expand our definition of what it means to have or to collect.
You know, you certainly can't be holding a baseball card in your hand. At least that's what my 10-year-old self tells me today.
Right.
So I think that the old definition, collecting, to have something in your hand, is it's probably never going to change, even though it might be different.
Yeah. And so what companies are doing the most interesting things with this? You mentioned Topps and their app. What other companies or particular projects within the companies are doing things that really caught your attention?
Sure. Topps and Panini America are the two brands that really drive baseball cards today in the U.S. They both have apps. They both have these on-demand cards. I really do think that is one of the most interesting things that I learned. A vice president of marketing at Topps talked to me about their vision for encouraging fathers and sons or fathers and kids to collect together. And one of these ideas was this on-demand collecting. So you could go to a game and see a milestone event and go on to Topps.com and download that card and have it sent to your house in physical form in a few days. And right there you have a priceless memory of something that you shared as a family. I don't know if that's going to be the future of collecting, but it's certainly one aspect. And I think, you know, the sentimentality of it all is an important factor in card collecting.
Yeah. And what did you get the sense of how it's shifting perhaps the more trade side of it? Not necessarily the collector, but someone who's there as a collector slash dealer or broker of cards.
Well, they certainly see people wanting more valuable cards, always wanting more valuable cards. That's why we've seen a trend of these game used items embedded into cards. Everybody wants something that someone else can't have. I mean, that's just kind of a human nature. So they're seeing more desire for those types of cards. And you can't beat some of the classics, the Mickey Mantle, Joe DiMaggio era. Those cards are always going to be valuable. Moving forward, I think people say that rookies really drive the game. So last year, Aaron Judge, the Yankee slugger, was a big star and really helped drive a lot of card sales for the industry. We'll see who it is this year. It's a lot of people are talking about Ohtani, the Angels hitter slash pitcher. There's a lot of interest in him. So, you know, the star players are always going to be the ones who get people to get people excited, and I don't think that's going to change.
Right. Well, anyone who follows me on Twitter, I'm going to tweet this story out so you can read it after the program, because it is a really, really fascinating look at where good old baseball card collecting and the digital time that we're in have met and are figuring each other out a little bit. So thank you so much for being with us today, Alex. This is a really interesting topic.
All right. Thanks, Amy.
All right. We'll be back in just a bit to continue all this good stuff here on 720 WGN. One issue in every workplace that I think anyone who say doesn't is not like someone working at home, working from home anyway, right? If you work in an office, this has been an issue for you on some level, and that is you bring your lunch, you put it in the shared fridge, you go to get your food, it is not there, and that is very upsetting. Sometimes it's really, you know, more than just upsetting. If you're on a budget, you can't afford to go get more food. That can be a big problem. Well, so there was a a story. If you are a social media user, I'm sure that you saw this or you saw one of its words, one of its phrases trending and thought, what in the world is going on? So this was the story that Griffin and I were just talking about a little bit on the break that is so ridiculous and funny, but I think so identifiable. And that is there's a man who was, he's Zach Toscani on Twitter, and he did this Twitter thread about stolen lunch, in particular with shrimp fried rice that was stolen from his workplace fridge. And it became this, it was almost shocking, Griffin, like how viral this went, because it's such a universal thing. Like anyone who's been in an office for any length of time, you've had your lunch stolen or you've witnessed someone's lunch or something like that being stolen. So he did this thread that felt very like, very Murder, She Wrote, like very much sleuthing it out here.
Yeah, it now has 150,000 retweets and 500,000 favorites, if that means anything to you.
It's considerable. And that's what I'm saying. It was shocking how viral this went about kind of sleuthing out the disappearing shrimp fried rice. And then who kind of said, well, we know who did it. We just don't know the motive for this. And it was all about like closed circuit TV and reviewing security footage. It was really quite...
If you didn't see it, the first tweet that kicked it all off is just worth noting. His coworker got his lunch stolen, and they've agreed to let him watch the security camera tape.
Which is right. Like, I think that's probably what, yeah, that set the tone.
Is involved now, and it's got an official air to it. And this is the most excited I've ever been at any job ever.
Right.
Is what he said. And that's what kicked the whole thing off, yeah.
By the time it gets... to the end, this other theory emerges that this is really perhaps retaliation on his part for a coworker bringing smelly food, and there's food in the trash that other people. It's right. The bizarrest thing. Not that he tweeted it. It's to me the bizarre part is how did this go so viral? It's well done and it's funny, but also like it feels like such a universal thing that why would. You know, to me, it felt like I were to live tweet making coffee in the morning, that would go viral. That would be ridiculous to me.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, the incarnations that the story takes are, you just assume that she ate, the thief who's then right. identified as a woman that they work with, ate the food. But then, according to the tape, she didn't even eat the food. She just took it and threw it out. So then it becomes immediately clear that she probably thought it was bad or right. something like that. But then it further complicates, and it seems like she knew it wasn't bad. And
she's just messing with someone.
And then you start to wonder, yeah, what did this guy do?
Right, right.
To elicit this kind of retaliation. And we don't have an answer to that. I think he probably did something kind of messed up, though. my impression.
Yeah, I also feel like there's another shoe that's going to drop.
Totally.
On Monday morning, this coworker is going to... Yeah. She's thought about it all weekend. She's going to come back. She's like, okay.
More than anything, watching it go so viral yesterday, I was just stressed out. Like, they can't work tomorrow or the next day.
Nobody got any work done.
Guaranteed. And because, like, now everybody's talking about this tiny little... office interaction, as you pointed out, it happens to everybody at some point.
Right.
That's not right.
There were many funny replies because immediately people start replying and telling their own story and their own kind of workplace, you know, food throwing outing sure. story. But there was one that said, LOL, this lady I work with once threw a sandwich out at her old job because she thought it was old. Turns out the dude just made the same sandwich every day and kept it in the same place every time. He asked who threw it out and she admitted it. Now they're married. That's a nice little how we met. How did you guys meet? Well, I thought he was disgusting and left his food in the office fridge too long and I threw it out and he got mad at me and... It was love.
We've been together ever since, and I still throw out
his food. Disgusting sandwich.
That's sweet. I also like how we take every tweet as just absolute fact, no question. That's right. Something that became clear, like halfway down this long thread of tweets is like, this guy's a comedian and writer. It would behoove him to make something
to make this work
right? if he wanted to. So there's no real confirmation of any of these, but it's worth the. Kicking around anyways, what we all decided online yesterday.
That's right. Yeah, there was another tweet added that said, once my boss, who was on a diet, threw out an entire pan of homemade brownies that someone else had left on a communal table so she would not be tempted.
Wow.
And then it says, an entire pan, period, period, period.
That's wild.
That's not nice.
That's
especially
crazy.
From the boss.
It's the rude only way for anyone. You can get away with it is if you're the boss. Man, That's intense. Because I've seen people do that kind of thing at home. But it, also, you would never do it with something that somebody else made.
No.
I've seen my mom make a dessert that doesn't get all eaten at the whatever meal it was designated for, and then she throws it out, which would always bum me out. But
sure.
I understand it. Yeah. I don't really support it, but I get it. But in the workplace, it's a different ballgame.
Whole different ballgame.
That is not acceptable.
No.
That's crazy.
See, here's how I would always remedy that. Because if I know I've got food waiting on me, I don't wait for it. So I would just eat lunch by like 10 every time I brought my lunch when I worked in a, you know, in a an office setting all day long.
Yeah, it does illuminate how the importance of lunch in the workplace, like that ritual is, and if you mess with somebody's lunch, it has like real ripple effects. That's, it could be a day ruiner.
It can be a day ruiner. It can be a budget ruiner. I mean, I know
for that reason,
I know a journalist who told me about early in his career. I mean, this story just stuck with me because it's so sad that he would like wait. There was like a sandwich shop, and he would buy a certain hour of the day earlier in the day. The sandwich would be on sale, so he would buy it and eat half for lunch because his budget was so tight. And he would eat half for lunch, and then the other half would be dinner. And he would, like, if he went and the sandwich was gone, that was all the food he had for the day. And he couldn't, you know, he couldn't really afford to go buy another one, and it was out of his budget because he was like trying to make it work as a young reporter. And he was kind of talking, reminiscing about early career stuff. And that story's so sad to like not be able, you know, he couldn't afford to have more. So don't mess with people's stuff is the.
Yeah, have you ever had a lunch stolen?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. That's why I just eat it when I get to work. That's how I remedy that.
And let's just be really honest here.
Yeah.
And maybe, I don't know if Bob's up there, because he strikes me as the type. Bob's just a wild card. You never know.
Are you about to ask if I've ever stolen anyone's lunch?
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely not. I mean part of the reason.
That's what you would say.
No, but also part of the reason I always bring lunch is because I have a couple of food allergies I like to eat really healthy food. So I don't, you know, I'm not like too much of the fast food person.
That's true.
I mean, sometimes, but not really. You know, I try to eat really, really thoughtfully. So, you know.
I'm sure people around WGN, especially during the week, have a tale or two like this to tell. But actually, what I've found is that there's always... It's more like people leave food.
Yeah.
You get free food here... Sorry, but we're lucky. At the radio station, you often get free food, and it's just laying around. And at a certain point, it's like, whose is this? Can they get rid of... Like, it actually does become... You want
that
people
is
to get rid of
the
it.
The first thing that I do, because...
There's
always if you
food
have,
around, and it's like...
Right, if you have like
it's
a...
been there for 18 hours.
If you have like a chef or a restaurant... If you have somebody on, they usually come on with food, and so there's usually quite a bit of it. So yeah, the first thing you... I think in all newsroom and broadcast situations, if there's food sitting out, the first thing you say is, when did this get here? Because it might have been 2 days ago.
It might have been an hour ago, but very rarely is that the case. It does seem like it's always like, I think that's been here for...
I mostly ask just out of curiosity.
30 hours.
It doesn't necessarily stop me. It depends on what it is. I've been like, how long have these grapes been sitting out? 3 days, they look fine. I'm cool.
How much can I expect to enjoy it when I inevitably eat it? Either way.
Right. How should I try to flush my system out with water after eating this, or am I good? Yeah. How should this go?
Yeah.
You're exactly right. I think we have the opposite problem here, is there's probably like things left behind.
Although I'm sure if anybody at the station is listening right now, they're like, no.
No, I know.
Or like guiltily, like, it's me.
Yeah.
The office thief at WGN. But I wouldn't know. I'm not here during the week very much, so.
Yeah, same. Yeah, no, when I would bring
We're
lunch,
a family at weekends. We would never do that.
Yeah, we would never
not
do
Not on
that.
Saturdays.
Also, we're not here long enough to, like, store stuff. We arrive, we eat our food, and we scurry home. That's the thing, right?
I guess so.
That's the thing. But, no, I would, I think that would be, well, anyway, if you haven't seen this thread and you are a Twitter user, go find it. It's very, very funny, and there's a lot of very funny replies on it from
that
people
was,
telling horror stories.
Just one last thing. That was one of my favorite things in the replies, where people actually, like, it was, I've done that. And it's like, wow.
Yeah, the confessors. Yes. That was kind of the second part of it. People were like, yeah, that's fair. I have. I think it's, I don't know, I think there's probably nuances we could probably sit here and talk about for a while of types of there's like the oh my gosh I accidentally ate your lean cuisine
or
I thought it was mine
threw it out I thought it was bad which is again I ended up being on this lady's side I think she must have had some good reason for throwing out the
or she really hates that guy.
Yeah. Well, that's a good enough reason for me.
I mean, fair enough. Anyway, check it out on Twitter. It's really fun and you know, there's plenty of not fun things happening on Twitter sometimes. So we like to point it out when there is something kind of fun and silly there for you to see. So we're going to take a little break. We're going to get you to news, all that good stuff, back in just a bit here on 720 WGN.